Want to learn how to podcast like me? Join us for the How to Podcast Weekend Webinar, June 25th and June 26th. You can sign up at howtopodcast.biz.
Hello, everyone. This is Pod Nuts Daily, episode number 315. I am your host, Tim Kelly, and this week in my computer repair shop, I seem to have a slew of customers who, well, they seem to basically diagnose their own computer problems. And you got to be really careful with that. For instance, hey, I've got a bad power jack on my laptop. Are you sure it's a bad power jack? Yes, it's a bad power jack. Okay, bring it on in. We'll take a look. And, you know, it's been turning into things like a bad motherboard or a bad power adapter. So just a quick little rundown of what I've been running into here the past couple of days. Podnuts Daily is a show where computer repair business owners, computer repair enthusiasts come on and they share information, ideas, stories. And this week we have David Temple is our guest from TCPServices.com, located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, David, how you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem, man. Hey, it's always good to have you on. And how about what I just touched on? You ever get those customers who diagnose their own computer problems?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the time it's kind of like you said, it's less than it actually is, or their diagnosis is less than it actually is. Just because I think they're trying to, you know, save money or something like that, you know. So they'll come in, they'll say something like, oh, I have a virus, and it turns out that you know, their hard drive is failing or something like that, you know, or their yep. File system's all screwed up. But yeah, I get people like that. And you know, usually once you kind of sit them down and tell them what's going on, they're usually pretty open to listening about it, you know. I mean, they came to you for a reason. If they knew everything, they'd fix it themselves. So
you got to be careful too. Never ride on what those customers tell you. I'll give you an example. I had one just this week who said his power jack is bad on his laptop. Oh, really? He goes, yep. He bought a new adapter, and he even took the laptop into another computer repair shop here, and they also told him that he had a bad power jack. He said he's leaving to go out of town in 2 days. Can we, what can I do? And I didn't have the jack in stock. So the very first question I asked him was, are you sure? Are we sure it's the power jack? Yes. So, then my next step was to just order a power jack overnight. And, but I just made it clear to him that if it's not the power jack, that, he's going to be fully responsible for paying me for that rush delivery. And, sure enough, you know, the next day the jack comes in, I get the laptop on my bench, and it's a dead motherboard. So yeah, just be careful.
I've had one that was actually good news for the customer. They came in, they dropped their laptop and broke the screen, or so they thought, and they brought it in, and the screen wasn't lighting up, you know, so you could shine a flashlight and kind of see the images. So I'm thinking, okay, bad bulb. They probably broke the bulb. I got it apart, and it turned out, however they dropped it, they just dislodged the inverter cable from the screen. You know, the little two wire thing that goes in the inverter. It just had fallen out somehow. So I just plugged it back in, thing fired right up. And so, you know, I called them, and they didn't have to buy any parts or anything. I just, you know, they just paid me for the service. So it was a good news for them, saved themselves, you know, $100 or so.
Absolutely. Yep, no doubt. All right, David. If you got a list of information there, I'm sure you do. You always bring some good stuff to the show. So what you got for us?
I think the first thing I'm going to talk about is AdWords. Just kind of now in the interest of full disclosure, I will say that I hadn't purchased Steve's TechSite Builder before I started my shop. I didn't know, everything was kind of all set up before I even knew about it. So I had AdWords set up and everything like that. And, you know, I kept getting the invoices and the emails from them, and I'm just, you know, it's always just a kick in the gut when you got to pay Google that much money. And so I dug in to my AdWords settings and found a lot of random keywords and things that got put in there. Either, when you first started up, Google will kind of suggest certain things for you.
Yep.
And so I feel like I went through all of those at the beginning. I know I did. I went through all those at the beginning, but I must have just checked some that I thought would have been pertinent to our business. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really quick way to get nickel and dimed by Google. You know, if I go in there and I see things like Toshiba notebook repair, right? And maybe one person clicked on it, but however many people saw it. So it's little things like that, except if you multiply it by 24 or 25 different, little keywords, that adds up in a hurry. So I went through and I was checking them all off, making sure, only one person has clicked on this keyword, or clicked on our ad from searching this for, the last 3 months. So I got rid of that, and I'm like, nobody is seeing, or people are seeing these things, but nobody's calling about them. And these little, $1.50 here, $2.30 thing there, that stuff adds up really, really quickly. So I think I ended up saving us about probably like $170.
Wow.
For the month, or for 2 months, I think, when I added it all up. Or that's what I would have saved had I deleted them,
You got a pretty large population there in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. I would imagine the larger the population, the more important it is to go in and really comb through those keywords. Because that stuff can add up really quick.
Exactly.
Hey, while you're on the subject, David, I don't know if you did, but I got an email from Google about AdWords. I think it was a couple of weeks ago. And I didn't really like what I was reading. Now I pretty much hang my hat on AdWords in my location for my business. I mean, it does me well, but what they sent me was an email stating that they are now going to charge you as a click if someone just clicks on the get directions link or a map link, that's in your ad. So they're going to start charging that as a click. I haven't really seen my click rate ramp up, but I did make note of that.
So like if you show up in like Google Maps when they like in the, because Google Maps has the ads on the side too, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Uh-huh. And when your ad shows up, even doing a normal Google search, it gives you like three options, like get directions or location, without actually clicking on your website link. So they're going to start charging for that also. But I just wanted to throw that out there because it's kind of interesting. I haven't seen a anything ramping up on my end as far as clicks go, but something just to keep in mind.
That's their business model. They can pretty much change it as they want. Yeah. I'm sure they're really strapped for cash over there. So,
close to bankruptcy.
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah. So that's just something I wanted to point out. Cause I know AdWords is important to everybody and, keeping, especially if like us, you have a daily limit, keeping that, and we get, you get that email from them every day if you've gone over your daily limit. And since doing those little things, it maybe took me 20 minutes and I noticed that email coming later and later and later in the day that we've gone over. So, just a little something. I don't know what it is, but AdWords has just been drying up for me lately. We've like in the past, probably 5 weeks, the last 5 week window, the first 2 weeks of that window were really, really good. Things were ramping up big time and I was getting excited, okay, summer's here, people are going to start coming in, and then things have just fallen off the table. I don't know what it is, but, I'm just desperately looking for anything else that we can do, to get our name out there. Cause it seems like, people aren't clicking on AdWords. I read in an article somewhere, that's totally something my mom would say. I read this somewhere, but I did read somewhere. Someone had posted something saying that there's an idea that people in larger population. Oh no, it was on the forums. It wasn't on the in an article, but someone had suggested the idea that maybe people in larger populations are a little bit more savvy to what's an ad versus what is an organic kind of result. And I'm wondering if that's maybe biting us in the butt a little bit too, or if it's just a weird downswing. I don't know. I can't, obviously I can't say, but it's just been, it's been pretty slow the last couple of weeks. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Really? Well, I mean, I've been doing pretty well with AdWords. I know whenever I first started AdWords, it took, almost 4 or 5 months before I started really getting, you know, business off of it actually. But I'm getting mixed reviews from fellow, you know, technicians. You know, it just really depends on the area, and it depends on how you have your AdWords set up. Also, it's really important, you know, to have your AdWords set up correctly. Plus, it has to link to a good site. So those two things combined, you know, you have the best chance. And if you purchase the Tech Site Builder at techsitebuilder.com, you will learn all of the almost all of the tricks you need to know with Google AdWords. But yeah, mixed results on that. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting the clicks. It just seems like we're not getting the conversions, and I don't know why. I don't know if people are just poking around, and we've gotten a, you know, I shouldn't say it's totally been, you know, crickets the last couple, last couple weeks, but it's been kind of slow. A lot of clicks, but no conversions, and I don't know what that is. So, which kind of leads me into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is some other ways that we've been, you know, trying to get our name out there. It's easy for me to say now because these are things we just started doing, and I don't know exactly how they're gonna, turn out. But just some ideas, and maybe some other people can jump off of those and use them in their own business. One of the first things that we did was we wanted to get more business clients, I guess, and not in the traditional sense, because we both, you know, we have limited amount of work with servers and things like that, but not really so much where we'd be necessarily 100% comfortable servicing, a large scale kind of operation like that. So what we've been doing is targeting smaller businesses, like real small businesses, you know, maybe like a place with maybe 3 or 4 employees, you know, or so they wouldn't have a server, you know, necessarily, or if they did, it was probably hosted somewhere, but usually they don't. And so basically we want to do kind of the same kind of work that we do for residential customers, but pointing toward the business end, so to speak.
So yeah, I like where you're going with that.
Yeah, it just seems like the work would be very similar, you know, setting up backups for people, because that's really important for business, you know, making sure everyone's virus free and hardware tests and stuff. So we set up kind of a package deal for a certain price per computer per year. And that includes, you know, 4 check-ins per year, where we come to your business and check up on everything, make sure everyone's, like I said, virus free, all your RAM is good, and your hard drives aren't failing, and your backup is working like it should, or initiating a backup if they don't have one.
Hey, David, what kind of a backup solution would you recommend for a small business like that?
I guess it depends on how much work they wanted to put into it, you know, because you can set up an on-site backup pretty easily and cheaply, but then you also have to make kind of a redundant backup that you take with you. You know, it has to be offsite somewhere, obviously, in case of a flood, fire, you know, tornado, something like that. But for ease of use, probably we're a Carbonite reseller, and that's probably what I would recommend. You know, just because you don't have to think about it. And that's usually why people don't do it in the first place. You know, if they don't have a backup, it's because they haven't thought about it and they don't really want to worry about it. So, you know, getting them set up with a kind of automated online backup thing would probably be the way I would go for those people, I think.
That's a pretty solid solution. Absolutely.
Yeah. I it's something that we kind of redid our backup thing here recently, where we used to host all our documents on Dropbox. Well, that's how we started off, just because at the beginning it was easy for everybody, you know, me and my business partner, you know, we could always access the files and get them, you know, invoices and you know, anything basically business related. And that was really easy. But then I started hearing, you know, reports coming out every now and again about security holes in Dropbox and things like that, where, you know, people accidentally getting their I think there was a, yeah, some, they got hacked somehow. And then, you know, the people, a lot of people had to reset their passwords as a precaution and yep. things like that. And I listened to that, the Security Now podcast, that the Twit Network does, with Steve Gibson. And yeah. And, he was pointing out some kind of, shaky stuff in Dropbox. And, you know, if it's for your personal, you know, if it's for like your resume and all your kids' pictures and, you know, whatever else you got in there, that's like nobody really cares, you know? But for business stuff, it kind of made me a little squeamish, you know, just because we have all the, we don't keep credit card information on there. So, that wouldn't be affected, but you know, everyone's name, address, email, phone number, things like that. That's not necessarily something I'd want to have to give people a call about and let them know, you know, sorry, somebody hacked into our Dropbox. So, we set up, a solution here, in-house where we just have, it's an older, that's not that old. It's an Intel box with XP on it, you know, a couple gigs of RAM. So it runs just fine. And, you know, we have a hard drive in there. That's basically the entire thing is shared over the network, which is obviously locked down. And then that has a redundant backup inside of it. So basically just makes a copy to the other hard drive in the machine. And then I have a USB thumb drive that I pop in there every Friday and copy over all the stuff onto that thing. Because the server itself holds, you know, all the customer documents, but it also holds like our ISOs and our, you know, like our laptop repair videos, things like that, you know, that we may need access to. But if we lost it, we could obviously get it back and it wouldn't be a big deal if the building burned down. But I have a 16 gig memory stick that I put in there, and it's encrypted and stuff. So I move all that stuff over there every Friday to make sure that in case something does happen to the building, you know, we have a backup plan for that. So that's what we've been doing now. And we actually use Hamachi. That's a product by the Log Me In people. It's kind of a VPN and it works really slick, and you can use it for free for up to, I forget how many computers, like a dozen or so. We're basically install the Hamachi server part on whatever machine will be. You can do a hub and spoke kind of network, or you can do a mesh network. And we do the hub and spoke, where basically the XP box with all the files on it is the hub. And then we have, you know, three or four computers that connect to it if we're offsite. And that works pretty well. I mean, it's a little slow, you know, it's going over the internet. It's a VPN. It's not going to be lightning quick, but if you need to access something on the go or add something to the server, or, you know, copy something over, it works pretty well. So that's what we've been doing for that.
With Hamachi, you can like transfer files. Can you do things like boot into safe mode and stuff like that with Hamachi? Do you know?
No, you can't do basically, yeah, you have the Hamachi client on the server running all the time. And then, and it works in Mac, Windows. I don't think it works in Linux, if I'm remembering correctly. I'd have to double check. But you basically launch that and you log in, and then it just pops up the computer in, in your, like, my network, the network.
Okay, I got you.
And then so you can just double click on it and access anything that's shared.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
But you can drag and drop from it too, you know, and stuff like that. And Word documents, you know, it's like I said, it's a little slow, but maybe it's 10 seconds as opposed to 2 seconds, you know, or something like that. So I wouldn't recommend hosting video on it or anything, but.
It seems like a pretty good solution for a small business. Hey, and another thing I've looked into, and I do mostly residential, but I've loved to dabble into the small business stuff, but Google Docs and Google Apps have been popping up around here in businesses that work pretty well. Have you ever dabbled in that?
Yeah, well, we have our emails hosted through Google Apps. So we have that just because it works really well with basically any email client and basically any smartphone. You know, it's just like adding a Gmail account. So we did that. I think if we had it all to do over again, we'd probably have everything on Google Docs, I would think, just because it seems so much easier. When we first started, they must have made a lot of improvements now, because I can see that like creating templates and designing things are a lot easier to do. And, you know, we have our own custom invoice that we make, you know, that we edit. You know, we have a master copy and then we just plug in all the info. You know, it's a fillable form, basically, and then pop it out and print it. But when I first started, those were really hard to use and hard to get it the way you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And maybe I was just more comfortable with Word, but that's what we ended up doing it in is Word. But I think if we started today, we'd probably use Google Apps and Google Docs just because it really is just so much easier to do, especially and if you pay for the storage, you know, if you pay for the enterprise yeah. thing and not the free thing, it just opens it up even more. So we probably, I think we're too far down the river now to go back, but
right.
It's something I would recommend for, you know, when we, a couple months ago, we had a couple, husband and wife come in who just started a flooring consultant business. I'm not exactly sure what they did, but, we set up a website for them, basically a really simple website for them, which is basically just a landing page with all their information on it, you know, their email address and stuff. They didn't want anything fancy, and they got it pretty cheap, but we set them up with Google Apps, you know, at their domain, you know, their email addresses and stuff. And they seem to be real happy with it. They, the wife has an iPhone and the husband had a Droid. So we were able to set them up with their email and stuff real quick. And they seem happy with it. I haven't heard any complaints. So it seems like a good thing for a small, you know, kind of startup thing, pretty easy to use.
Yeah. I use Google Apps every day for my business and, I love it. I can't see me veering away from it. It works well and it has improved even the past year. It definitely has improved as far as functionality, you know, creating your documents, how you want them, setting up your, you know, setting up your pages and everything, how you want it. Okay. It has improved. So,
yeah. Cause I mean, we have Excel spreadsheets for like accounting and, we have like a running work log where basically, you know, anything that new comes in, we just write down everything that's involved with it. And that would work good on it. But when we first started up, our invoices just weren't printing right and they look kind of goofy. And, so we just ditched it. But, yeah, I guess from everything I've read, they've made a lot of improvements. So do you use anything besides the docs? Like, do you use any of the other services? Cause I got to admit, I'm not real familiar with everything.
No, just the email services, sync with my phone. And I use the docs really basically to print up all of my work invoices, my repair work orders, any of my estimates. You know, I can import my logo right on them. And you know, so for all of my documents, yeah, it works really good. And I can just go in, add my customers, hit save, everything saves up to the cloud. I can go in and access that anytime I want to, in any way I want to, even, you know, even on my phone, even while I'm away. It's been rock solid for me. The apps part of it, not so much, but you know, I'm always got my feelers out asking people about that to see how it's working for them. And just kind of gathering information because, well, like I say, I'd like to get into the small business side of things too. So, you know, all the information that anybody can give is good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering if there's a way to back up those documents like that are on the cloud. Is there a way to get a local, like kind of batch copy of all those? Is there like a batch download or something like that? I'm always super paranoid about that stuff. So I was like,
once I edit my document, I'll do a save as, and then I'll throw down a PDF and then I'll save it, you know, to the cloud. And then, so then I have a hard copy, the PDF, and I can pull that off and, you know, do it on my drive, take it out of the building, whatever I need to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. I should look more into that and get more familiar with it. Cause I think, like you said, small businesses would be interested in at least hearing about it and, being able to show them kind of how it works, you know, cause I listen to Podnuts Pro and things like that. And I, you know, read certain blogs, obviously, and listen to other podcasts and they talk about, you know, kind of hardcore IT management stuff, you know, Microsoft certified servers, SQL servers, things like that. And that's not something I'm really, you know, a part of, but, you know, I feel like I'm not thinking of a whole subset of businesses who, you know, maybe have just a couple laptops and a printer, you know, that could be it, you know, and they're always looking to save time and money too. So,
I'm with you on that. And you can always charge more, you know, for those jobs than residentials. Yeah. I'm right with you on that, David. No doubt. Because the last thing I want to do is jump right into a big corporate environment. And so yeah. Starting off small is what I'm all about.
Right. That's kind of the whole reason we got into this, was to not be, you know, sitting in cubicles all day, you know, working on stuff. At least for me, that was it. So, you know, that's not necessarily something I want to get back into. But I think, you know, we actually, Matt, my business partner, his sister just graduated college, with a marketing degree. And, this is actually something else I want to talk about. We hired her, so to speak, in that, you know, she does a few things for us around the office, kind of, you know, more marketing paperwork, you know, kind of busy work, kind of stuff. That, you know, leaves us obviously to fix computers and gives her a little bit of experience, and then, you know, and then she can put it on a resume and, you know, I can be a reference for her. So it's kind of it's, you know, she puts in maybe a couple hours a week, you know, nothing huge, but, that was one of the things she started doing, was sending out these letters, to local businesses and things like that. And, you know, with the, with jobs the way they are, and, you know, college graduates, just entering the, you know, the workplace, or, you know, the field, that might be something people might be interested in doing, you know, 'cause everyone's got a nephew or a niece or a brother or something, a cousin who just graduated. So, you know, if they're into business type things, you know, maybe have them come over for an hour a week and just do some stuff for you. And then they can get experience, and even if it's not really pertinent experience, or it's, you know, really dumb work, whatever, it's something else you can put on your resume and you can get a, you know, a reference for it at least. And so
that's real smart too. And in considering that they're only coming in for a couple of hours, you know, you don't have to pay them as a full-time employee, which helps with your taxes. And, so that's a win-win. That's a good idea. It's a really good idea.
We actually don't even pay her, to be honest with you. We have a deal set up where any business she brings in, she gets 10%. That's what we said. So if she gets,
nice.
You know, and if she wants to hand out flyers or hand out business cards or put up posters, I don't care. She can, you know, do whatever she wants. You know, because she's the one with the degree, not me. So I figured she has better ideas than I do. So whatever she can bring in, you know, she gets a little cut. And then
you're talking about interning sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah, just helping out. I mean, she, you know, she's got a thousand applications in, and but the rest of the time she's just sitting around. So, you know, I think it's, you know, she gets to come downtown and hang out for a little while and, you know, go to lunch and whatever. So, I think it's kind of nice for her to get out of the house too, but hopefully it works out for both of us. She gets, you know, she gets her cut and we get some business in. So, yeah.
Cool.
So that's something awesome to think about. Another thing that we just started doing this week, and so again, I don't have results to report, but maybe next time I'm on, I'll report them. Both Matt and I are big Minnesota Twins fans. There's a blog I read every week. It's just a baseball blog, a guy who blogs about the Twins, but he's been doing it for a real long time and actually has quite a substantial following. And he just started selling advertising on his website. It's not like in the Google ad network or anything. It's basically, you know, you pay him via PayPal and send him your logo and your, you know, and your write up, and he puts it on the sidebar. And then, at the bottom of every post every week, you know, you buy ad space for a week. And then at the bottom of every post, he puts, you know, this week's posts have been sponsored by TCPC services. Please visit their website, blah, 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 blah. And it's just local, because it's kind of a localized thing. You know, the Twin Cities area, at least most of the people, you know, or a big chunk of the people who read his blog are from the area because they follow the baseball team. So they, you know, they get, you know, relevant kind of, it's advertising, but it's pretty subtle. And, you know, he's doing it for free. Basically, he doesn't get any money off the site, that's until now. So
do you know about how much business you get from that? Or
we've been getting a lot of clicks from it. I can tell you that much. I mean, we just started on Monday morning. He does maybe like three or four posts on the week, and then one on the weekend. Sometimes more, sometimes less. I guess it really depends on how much news there is. But it's always up on the sidebar as well.
And
we've been getting a lot of clicks. No conversions yet, but
yeah. Do you ask your customers, where do they hear about mm-hmm. you and stuff like that?
We have a sign-in sheet basically when anybody brings in a computer, and there's a few check boxes for, I found you on Google, or I found you on Yelp or Facebook or whatever, and then, or word of mouth, or there's a bunch of them. And then there's an other box. And we actually set up a deal with his website, basically. Not even a deal. It's just an easy way to track where, readers of his blog get a discount if they call us, which really doesn't amount to much, but it's just a way to help us track it, basically. Because he wants to, I'd give him the website. I give you the website so you can see it, but I don't want to mess up his numbers because I know it's something that he's been interested in kind of tracking and keeping, kind of analytics on. I'll give him the analytics at the end of the week and we'll see how many convert. It's weird. Advertising computer repair always seems weird because it's not something you want until you need it. You know what I mean? So it's because nobody, or I don't find that many people are going, oh yeah, I have a broken computer. Maybe I'll bring it in. They usually wait till it breaks and then they call you, obviously. So, like I said, we haven't got any conversions yet, but who knows how many people have been bookmarking it and, or just writing it down, storing it away for, when the time comes. That's the kind of rocky road with direct marketing for a service that most people don't want until they're in dire straits, basically.
Hey, that's a good point. I mean, you can the moral of that story is to, rub elbows with some bloggers in your local community, you never know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's, especially if you're keeping it local and you mentioned that you're a local business. I think that's an important thing too. And it could be, I mean, like I said, ours is about baseball, but you could do, I think sports are a good one just because, those are pretty regional by definition, your local basketball team or, college or pro. But there's a bazillion blogs in the whole on the internet. So you can find a local one. Maybe it talks about the local music scene or the local art scene or anything. Find one you like too. You don't have to just go throwing your logo up on any old crappy website. I'm sure there's one that everyone follows that's local to their area. So even if they don't offer advertising opportunities, it might be a good idea just to
check,
give them a buzz and check. You never know, maybe they're up for it.
Great advice, man. I might do me some calling around with some bloggers in my area. I never thought about that, honestly.
Yeah, and it's cheap for us. I think we paid $150, I think, for the week, which is cheaper than AdWords, and it's unlimited clicks. Who knows how many people are going to click on it? I think the guy gets over 150,000 hits a week. So
wow,
that's
a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah, I consider that a pretty good deal for the amount of eyeballs. And like I said, you don't know how many people are bookmarking it or writing it down. Anyway, you can get your name out there. We just ordered not too long ago these little business cards. Basically, we got on Vistaprint, like I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. But they're little 10% off coupons, basically, just business card size. And so, because we find, people will see us in our work shirts, out and about, or just making small talk. Oh, what do you do? And then you say, oh, I repair computers for a living. And then almost everybody has a computer problem they want to talk to you about. Oh, I got this is going on, or, my kid's computer is acting up, blah, blah, blah. And so, you listen and nod your head, but what you really want to do is get them in the shop. So you can give them your business card and, it'll say, mine says David Temple, technician/owner, TCPC services. But I think giving them kind of an incentive to give you a call as well, because they take your card and they put it in their wallet maybe, or they put it in their pocket and it gets thrown in the laundry. But this has value, sexual value, even though they haven't, initiated it yet, it does have value. So maybe they'll be more prone to remember that they talked to you, oh, that's right, I talked to this guy, he gave me a coupon, and it's a 10% off ours is, which again, isn't that much, but mm-hmm. it's something, and it gets people thinking about you just because, everybody, so, whenever you tell someone you're a computer repair person, they automatically want to talk to you about it. Everyone's got a computer problem, it seems.
Yeah. So I've always wondered about that because I've seen other businesses do it. So you do it yourself. So do you see actual customers coming in with that coupon in their hand saying, hey, you know, here's my coupon.
We've had a couple. Yeah, they're okay. We tell them too. If you know, you can give them to your friends and your family. We mm-hmm. whenever we whenever someone comes in to pick up their computer after we do a repair, we have a white folder that's got our logo on it and our website and phone number. And then in the folder is a copy of the invoice that they just signed. They get a refrigerator magnet and any pertinent paperwork. If they ordered parts or something, it has a warranty. Obviously that goes in there. And then the folders have a little business card holder. And we don't put ours in there because when they come in to drop off the machine, we give them our card. So they already have our card. So in the holder, we put in the 10% off coupon. And we say, use it for another computer, give it to a friend, family member. It doesn't matter. You know, we get them, we rip them up, obviously, so they're not circulating all over the place. But that would be a huge deal. But it's just, so it's good for anything. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have anybody's name on it or anything. It's just a little glossy business card with it. And we've had a few people. Some people have, gotten it from their sibling or something who's had a problem that we fixed, and they brought up something else in. So they've used it, and they seem to be happy, and it brings us traffic, so we're always happy.
Man, that's some really good tips. I like the refrigerator magnet. I need to get me some of those. I love those. It's a good idea.
I got that on VistaPrint too, and I don't know if it was the image I made or something, but we had a kind of a light blue background for it, and it looks really kind of spot. I don't have any here to show. No, they're all at the front, but it doesn't look that great. So I would recommend a white background. It doesn't look terrible, but it's not. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist like that. So I would recommend a white background with your info on it if you go that way. I don't know, because I know those are all made overseas anyway. So I mean, it's just a computer print them up. Nobody ever even looks at them. So. Because gotcha. They always, I get those templates, you know, we're actually making a poster for our window that we're going to put up soon. And they, you know, you can download Adobe Illustrator templates for it, which is really handy because it's all sized and, you know, and they give you the, like the dimensions and then the border lines. Basically, it comes with a layer that gives you the border and it says, don't exceed this border. It might not print right. Mm-hmm. And then it has to put a disclaimer at the bottom saying, make sure to hide this layer when you save the file, or this will show up on your poster. We're not liable if this template thing shows up on your poster. So, it just goes off to a server somewhere and then just gets downloaded and printed and sent off to you. And nobody even looks at it. So,
wow. Yeah. I'm going to look
cheap. At
that. Yeah. All right, David, we're going to take a little break here for an ad actually.
All right.
All right. Let's see. In case you guys haven't heard, Fab's Auto Backup 4 for Technicians was recently released and has breakthrough improvements over the already amazing Fab's Auto Backup. Fab's Auto Backup is a key program for PC technicians needing to backup customers' data and transfer it to new machines or installations. This new version is mostly designed for professionals like computer repair shops who need to backup data for several users' accounts and at once, or to save data from unbootable computers. Like Fab's Auto Backup 3, it makes the backup and restores tasks easily. This program handles the backup and transfer of emails, documents, and much more. PodNuts guys are going crazy about this program. See what all the buzz is about and find out more at podnuts.com/fabs. Now, I have to ask everybody to please use the PodNuts link when purchasing this product, podnuts.com/fabs. If you want to help support PodNuts, there's a lot of guys. I don't personally use Fabs Auto Backup, but I will tell you, there's so many guys that I talk to that do use it, and they're telling me I'm missing out. And just real quick, it does everything from, you know, backing up the user settings, their desktop backgrounds, all of their icons, just tons of settings and all that, just doing a normal, you know, reinstall of installation of Windows. It basically, I guess you could say, it brings their computer back to a state in which your customer will recognize. Instead of just being, you know, bare bones, install. Do you use Fabs Auto Backup?
I don't, but I actually just heard about it from the last episode, which I was listening to this morning, and I looked it up, and as soon as a couple of these computers get picked up and paid for, I'm gonna go buy it, because it seems like a really great idea, mostly because when you do a reinstall of an OS, customers don't understand why it doesn't look the same as it did before. It's hard enough trying to explain to them why their programs aren't on there. You know, like, you know, why is it not, you know, well, I guess iTunes is a bad one because that's easy to install. But like their copy of Office or something, right?
Yeah.
You know, why isn't my Office back on there? And you have to explain to them, well, you can't really back up applications because it puts 1,000 files in 1,000 folders and stuff like this. And and that's hard enough as it is. But if you can get even the you know, the simplest stuff, like their emails, that's not stupid. That's actually, that's really handy. But their desktop background and their user settings and, you know, their color scheme and stuff like that.
Yep, exactly.
It just makes it easier on them. You know, they feel
easier, it's easier on the tech, too, because how many times have you, you know, transferred customers' data over to their fresh install of Windows, and then they take off with their computer, and a day later they're like, hey, where are all my favorites?
Oh,
your favorites. Yeah, I didn't transfer that over. Gosh. You know, Fabs, it'll remind you of that.
Mm-hmm.
Little stuff like that, you know.
People care about their favorites, too. I use Chrome, you know, which keeps all your stuff synced on all your Chrome clients. So I don't even think about it ever, you know. And before that, I used Firefox with Xmarks and stuff like that. But I forget that people's favorites are saved, you know, locally on their machine. And I just don't think about it ever, you know. So it's something that people pointed out. No, I need my favorites. Like, it has... all those things are important to me, you know, so I'm like, all right, I will make sure that your favorites are on there. But yeah, not having to think about it just seems like a no-brainer for me.
You are so right, David. Okay, podness.com/fabs. All right, what else are we going to talk about, Dave?
I think I'm going to bring up a dirty three-letter word called Mac.
Get ready with the edit button. Oh, Mac.
I want to bring up a couple things. We've been, maybe it's the area or something like that, but I'd say probably 30 to 40% of our business is Macs.
Wow.
And
really?
Not that that's a bad thing. Yeah. A lot of them come in, and, there's a few things I've learned about Mac, and I'm a Mac user myself, so I can say this. Mac users, there's a few things I've learned about them. One is that they will pay a lot of money for a computer, but they will run that computer into the ground. I've had, you know, people bring in G4 PowerBooks. You know, we're talking like 2005, 2006 computers, or like the first generation, or like the old, iBooks. People bring those in, which are, again, 5 or 6 years old. They spend a lot of money on the computer, so reasonably enough that they, you know, they want to use it for a long time. And so I don't shun the Mac people, because I know they like, you know, they like their computer the way it is. And to be honest, they like spending money. So we had actually, side note, we had a guy come in with a G4 PowerBook that had a bad logic board, a bad top plate, you know, because it comes with the keyboard and the trackpad and everything comes together. So that was bad. The logic board was bad, and their power board was bad. Basically the separate, component that plugs into the logic board.
That's going to be pricey.
That was pricey. I think with the service and all the parts, he spent around $800. And that's after our cut for the service and a fair to moderate amount of markup. But he was more than happy just to get his old computer back the way it was, you know, and he was set. So, you know, and then we had a guy, come in with a MacBook Pro, one of the newer, you know, slimmer ones. He'd spilled up on it, and, that needed a new top plate as well as a new logic board, as well as a new hard drive. Cause his hard drive has died too, but he came out for still cheaper than a new laptop, you know. So right. His made a little bit more sense for me. So anyway, the point of the story is that I don't, I'm trying to learn more about Macs, basically, because one, we get, you know, we get so much, or so much of our business seems to come from them. And two, they're good referrals because they tell their Mac using friends about this other place. It's the weirdest thing. Minneapolis, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul area has three Apple stores in it, you know, in the metro area, as well as this place called First Tech, which was actually the first Apple retail store from way, way, way back. And they're an Apple certified, you know, repair place. But we still get plenty of people who, you know, they don't have Apple Care and those other places want too much. So, you know, they come over here. I just got this week, we got our first MacBook Pro with a cracked screen. I'm sure most of you are familiar, but if you're not, the new MacBook Pros, basically it's a glass front. There's no like bezel, basically, you know, that pops off. No plastic.
Yeah, they call it metal unibody.
Bezel. Yeah, unibody. Exactly. And so the screen, when it's cracked, it's kind of like an iPhone or an iPod where it's just a big piece of glass. It's not actually glass. It's like a weird plexiglass thing, but it's just a big crack in there. So a guy came in and he wanted it done, fixed. And, this is the first one we've ever done of that. We've done Macs before, but they were usually a little easier where you could kind of get the screen off, pop the bezel off, you know, and then it's pretty, pretty straightforward from there. But this one, you have to, it's, kind of glued onto the computer. So you have to get a, so we went out, I went to Home Depot, got a hot air gun. He paid for the hot air gun. So I feel good about that. I told him, I'm like, we need a new tool for this. You're going to have to kick in some money. And he said, that's fine. You just kind of heat it up. There's 100 videos on it and you can go on iFixit and stuff like that and look up how to do it. The point is that it's actually a lot easier than it looks. It came in and I was really looking at it thinking, I think I just want to give this back to him. Like, I don't think I want to bother with it.
You didn't have to use like the big suction cup thing, the glass.
Yeah, we did.
You did?
We went to Target. There's a big Target here downtown. And we got a GPS mount for your windshield. Okay. And because they sell those suction cups in like iFixit, but you know, they're a little pricey and you have to pay, you know, ship it and wait for it.
Did you just say a GPS mount? Is that what you said?
Yeah, a GPS suction cup mount for your windshield. We went and got it $7 at Target.
It's strong enough to pull that thing off?
Yeah, this one had like a locking mechanism. So it was kind of like, you know, it's like more bulbous or whatever. Then you lock it down, it flattens out and sucks real good on there. I think it popped off once maybe, but it wasn't a big deal. Yeah. And this one was, like I said, cracked. So, because that was the other thing. It's like if the LCD panel behind it breaks, you have to get the glass off, keep the glass intact and fingerprint free while you replace the LCD. But this one is LCD was actually fine. It was just the glass that was cracked.
So you can be as rough with the glass as you wanted to be.
Exactly. It was a nice kind of ease into that whole process because, if we break it, who cares? It's already broken. You know, we don't have to be that gentle with it. So we were kind of feeling it out. But it came out in basically one piece, kind of spider web. And then there's a few shards that we had to pick out of there. But not a big deal. So, give it a, I mean, if...
So, let's just say, for instance, you got one in that has the LCD that's broke, but the outside glass is okay. Would you use the same method?
Yeah, I think so, because it's that's the recommended method. And like I said, you can see we actually followed a YouTube video of it from a lady who was a certified Apple repair person. And because if you take it to the Apple store, if you're not under Apple Care, they won't just replace the panel. They want you to pay for the whole section. So a new backplate, new LCD, new glass, like the whole, you know, the whole screen assembly. They want you to buy a new one of those. Of course. So, but this lady was showing and it seemed, I mean, she got it off pretty easily. And from what we saw, like I said, I think it only, it was broken. So some of the pieces fell off, but I feel like if it was a solid piece of plastic, I'd have no trouble, you know, just popping it off.
I don't know, man. I get some Apple calls here and I've worked on a couple of Macs. But you know, I'm not sure if I want to do any more Macintosh work because it seems like everyone I get, there's always some issue like special tools needed, a special way to get to certain things. You know, it's, it's totally different in working with, you know, regular laptops. And then there's the price. You know, I've had several customers, "Oh, that's too high." Well, what do you mean it's too high? Go to Apple Store and see what they'll charge you. Yeah.
Oh, I've never had price complaints from Apple people. They are always more than thrilled to pay whatever I charge them. It seems I think
that's what I would have thought. I mean, you know, I'm not saying all of them, but now on the new MacBook Pros, from what I'm understanding, now you can't just change a hard drive out without using a special Apple hard drive because. Something about you've heard about that? Something about
that was actually, it's on my list. Yeah. That's the new, it's the new iMacs, those all in ones. If the hard drive goes bad on the old one, on the previous generation, there was a special sensor that you had to put on there, in a certain way. Otherwise it would pass the Mac hardware test, it would think it was overheating, so the fans would run at full speed all the time. And the new ones, actually, I had it bookmarked. I can put it on the show notes. Let me click on this real quick, just so I can make sure I'm reading it right. Let's see. Okay, for this time around, Apple has changed again. For the main 3.5-inch SATA hard drive bay, Apple has altered the SATA power connector itself from a standard 4-wire power configuration to a 7-wire configuration. Yeah. Hard drive temperature control is regulated by a combination of this cable and Apple proprietary firmware on the hard drive itself. From our testing, we found that removing this drive from the system or even from the bay itself causes the machine's hard drive fans to spin at maximum speed, and replacing the drive with any non-Apple original drive will result in the iMac failing the Apple hardware test. So that's something I want to bring up. I think that's kind of bogus, but and that's a bummer. I mean, I always, I use both Mac and PC. I think they both have their good qualities. I'm actually right now I'm Skyping on a Hackintosh that I made. Cause I like, It's weird, you know. I think it's always silly when people kind of pick one camp and then just stick with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't know. I just like computers enough to the point where I'll use either one. You know, like I like Apple's operating system a little bit better, but I also like Microsoft as a company a little bit better than I like Apple because they tend to do some weird business practices.
It just doesn't make any sense at all to me. I mean, come on, Apple. I mean, really? I mean, I can understand. Okay, you want to stay closed down, but I mean that's just locking your customer down really bad. I mean, a hard drive should not be, you know, that's almost like a self-destructive hard drive. Once you pull it, you know, you can't upgrade, you can't replace without.
Well, you go to the Apple Store. I know some of that stuff I could kind of see. I mean, I let it slide, but this one bothered me quite a bit just because it's just so dumb, you know. In a hard drive replacement, you know, what, $40, $60 for a new hard drive, and maybe you pay the guy $100 to replace it, you know, whatever. And you know, you're going to get charged 2 or 3 times that at the Apple store.
Yeah. You know, if I got as much Macs as you do, yeah, I would definitely have to stay in it, but I don't know, man. I you know, unless it's one that I know that I can do, you know, I think I'm pretty much going to be turning them away on my end, I think.
Yeah, that's so weird that they complain about. I mean, that's the only reason I've been open to having them come in. It's just, you know, because one, I know the operating system a little bit. I'm pretty familiar with it, and I kind of know. I've taken apart a fair amount of Macs, especially now. We've taken them all the way down, they always seem either they complain zero about the price, or they actually praise us for being so cheap. I think it's like I said, we have 3 Apple stores here, and so that's obviously the de facto place to bring it. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe they just overcharge so much that, you know, we come in and, you know, like I said, first of all, Apple parts are crazy expensive just even by an eBay, like logic boards and stuff. Man, oh man. And then we mark it up a little bit just because we do, and not terrible, but, you know, and then there's also our service, and especially like a motherboard replacement, that's a high end service, so we charge a little bit more for that. That takes a long time. So yeah, like I said, this guy G4 PowerBook that he could have bought used on eBay for $300 tops. He was happy, more than happy to pay $800 for all this stuff. And when Matt, he's the one who did the repair, and he's like, I'm just gonna tell this guy a really high number because he knew it was gonna be such a pain in the butt to do. Yep. And the guy's like, cool, do it. Go ahead, order the parts.
You better watch out when you do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And so now I gotta, you know, just because they're so, I mean, I give them credit for cramming. You know, the specs aren't as high as PCs, especially on the laptop, but they still get a lot of computer in a very, very small space. And I'll give them credit for that. But on the same side, it is also a pain in the butt to replace any of those components because
exactly,
it's not even like fitting everything side by side, but it's also fitting everything on top of itself. You know, like it's kind of yep. sandwiched in this weird like Tetris puzzle. And it's a pain. You know, but after you know, just some like of those, any computer,
some of those, not only do you need a special tool to remove some of the screws, but you also have to remove the screws in a certain order.
Yes. Yep.
And tons put them back of booby traps in a certain on a order. Mat.
Yeah. The screwdrivers aren't that bad. I think I got the screwdriver set at Micro Center for $9 or something.
Yeah,
for all
what,
those
the hex screwdrivers and all.
Yeah, and then there's a new one with the PowerBooks. Or PowerBooks, yeah. Excuse me, the MacBook Pros that have like a three slotted screwdriver. So we had to get one of those. And that was like $5. And I know it hurts more just the fact that you have to do it than actually paying for it because it's
yeah.
as much money as Mac people are throwing at me, I'm not gonna complain. So bring on the Apple. We put an Apple logo on our webpage now. Our new poster is gonna have an Apple logo on it, and we're not certified. So, and we tell people that, you know, this isn't mm-hmm. under AppleCare, and most people don't have AppleCare. It's expired a long time ago, so yep. they don't care. So, and they won't.
I'm glad I don't get a lot of Macs thrown my way, because then I don't feel so bad about turning them down.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody in that area who's doing it, but it sounds like you're getting enough work. In other ways, so.
I mean, like I say, if I had a lot of them coming to me, I would have to really, you know, change the way I think. but man, I hate working on Apple computers. I really do.
We could have a whole separate episode about this. We could have a whole separate podcast about this if we wanted to. But yeah, and another thing, actually, Apple just announced their newest operating system, Tiger, and that's only going to be available for download through the App Store. It's $30, which is cool that your OS upgrade is $30. But so basically, because if you don't know, a lot of times you need the system disk, right? The OS disk, and you boot from that, and that brings it to the install screen. But it also gives you the main thing it uses, the disk utility, so you can check permissions and repair hard drive, you know, check hard drive malfunctions, things like that. Mm-hmm. But you have to boot off the CD. So this makes me wonder how that's going to be possible once you upgrade to Tiger if you don't have a CD. Like, there's no way you can order a CD. You have to get it through the App Store. So that's something to keep an eye out for the other people who work on Macs. I found it's been linked all over the place now, so you can Google it. But somebody on Insanely Mac posted something about how to burn a Tiger DVD once it does come out, because the developers have the operating system already, so they can test it out. So there is a way to do it, get it on a disk. I don't know how it's going to work when the new thing comes out, but booting from a CD was kind of an important thing. So I'm wondering how that's going to happen with the new one, if they're going to allow you to make a flash drive or something, or boot a recovery CD, you know, because I know PCs will do that. You know, if you have an HP, it'll, you know, mm-hmm. you can boot a recovery CD or create a recovery CD that you can boot from later. So maybe they'll do that. Maybe they'll have a separate partition. I don't know. But when they had first announced it, they had some cool features. I'm like, all right, I'm on board with this. This looks kind of cool. $30 is a great price. Wait a minute. It's only offered through the App Store. How am I supposed to boot from it? It's like my computer tech, you know, switch in my brain immediately flipped. How am I supposed to boot from a CD if I can't burn a CD or a DVD? So we'll have to see what happens with that, but something to keep
in mind. Only one way to find out.
Yeah. And now I don't know how I'm going to be able to upgrade my Hackintosh to Tiger now, because I'm sure it'll screw up on my drivers and stuff. So I'll have to hold off until someone smart creates
a way. I kind of thought about that too. You know, they might be trying to pull something in such a way that, you know, you can't really hack their OS.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I would have to think that as far as their OS usage goes, 0.001% are running on non-Apple computers, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I don't know if it's really worth it. I think it's their whole everything is easy on a Mac kind of, you know, platform. So, you know, it's easy. You just buy it. It's $30. We charge your iTunes account, and then it just happens. And supposedly it's supposed to upgrade your OS without any restarts or anything. Like, it's just supposed to happen. So I'll be doing it because I'm a sucker, but I'll pay my $30. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Something to keep an eye out though on for if you have a customer, you know, it's supposed to launch in the fall. So if you have a customer come in the fall or winter who has the newest OS, think twice before saying you can fix it, because if you can't have a CD or a DVD, you might not be able to. So yeah.
Wow.
I think that's it. I think that's everything on my list. So I don't know if you have voicemails or whatever.
We have some emails from last week. I'll get into these here. Okay, let's see. This one says, greetings. I'm having a USB trouble on my Dell Latitude 600 laptop. I tried out everything software-based, but seems like no change. Here's the problem. When I plugged in my flash disk into the USB port, there is no light and does not detect or show anything in the OS. I tried different working flash disks. I checked drivers, and it's all installed correctly. I formatted my laptop with Windows XP and installed latest drivers from their website, but I don't know if the order of installation matters. On the device manager, everything seems to work fine. The problem started after a while. I changed my charger. I bought this charger for a cheap, and I recognize that it's not recognized by the BIOS, but it works anyway. And the other thing is that my battery is also dead, including my reserve battery. Wow, time and date resets every time I shut down. I hope that doesn't affect the ports. After I changed my charger, the USB port used to work for a few minutes and fails, disconnects while working. So I restarted the computer and it recognized it again for a few minutes. It goes like that, but after a while it just stopped working. And recently I noticed that the mouse pad doesn't respond like it used to. Sometimes it gets stuck, so I use the middle scroll between the keyboard keys. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate your effort. I think the name is Dagmawi. Hope I pronounced that right. USB problems on your laptop. With this, I was just wondering, you know, I don't know about the date and time thing. You know, maybe there's a CMOS battery problem. You usually get an error with that during post. But I'm just wondering if you put it in like a live CD, like a Linux live CD, like Puppy Linux or something.
Yeah.
See if your USB ports work then. He did say he reinstalled the operating system. It was still no luck, so I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards, you know, something wrong with the motherboard, USB ports. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do the same thing. If anybody brings up a hardware problem, especially a simple one, I usually put in either Ubuntu or Linux Mint, just because they seem to have the most universal kind, or the biggest kind of selection of drivers for stuff like sound, Wi-Fi, things like that. But a USB, any Linux distro should be able to have USB and detect it. So,
yeah,
I would. I mean, I hate to just, you know, fall on the failsafe of motherboard issue, but it seems like it.
Well, you know, with the date and time resetting and all that, I mean, I've had laptops come in my shop with the motherboard, you know, pretty much the controller for the USBs went out in them and they just don't work. But,
yeah,
you know, maybe try a few other things like disconnecting components from the motherboard, see if anything's like shorten, you know, pull out your any of your Wi-Fi cards, any of your other communication cards, your optical drive, you know, just disconnect things and see if anything shortened out possibly could be.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And check to see if you see any, you know, burning or anything, you know, any black marks or anything like that. But yeah, yeah, it could be a controller. I don't know. It seems like USB is kind of, all the other stuff is easy to, or harder to test, it seems, but USB, it's the U is universal, you know?
Hey, pull the battery. Try running it without the battery. See if that may, I've seen batteries just do some really wacky things with laptops, batteries.
Or reverse. Yeah. Pull the, you know, don't have it plugged in. Try everything. That's who knows, you know, it could be, yeah, maybe it's not getting enough power. That could be, I don't know, or something's inhibiting the power from getting there where it's
another good enough point.
Yeah.
Well,
hey, I want to, before you move on, I just want to point out, the people in the chat were right. I kept saying, OSX, Tiger, and I meant Lion. I wrote Tiger on my Evernote here. I just wrote the wrong thing and I'm a sucker without my notes. So I apologize. I meant Lion every time I said Tiger. So
just I was kind of worried, but you would know more than I, but I'm glad you were watching the chat because I wasn't.
No, I just sounded like a dummy just because I wrote the wrong thing a week ago when I was typing stuff in my Evernote.
Thanks. Yep.
Thanks, chat room. You were right. As usual.
Well, as soon as I get used to this a little more, I'll start following the chat. There's guys in there will throw me off sometimes, but they're great to have around.
Yep. They kept me in check. So,
okay. Let's see if I get this one right here. This is from Valentine. That's his name. First off, I love your show. I have a little cable company that, and I don't know where this guy is writing us from here. It was interesting though. I have a little cable company that doesn't have a clue. I am wondering if anyone there knows anything about the modems they use to send the internet to the customers. The problem they have is it goes out lots, is how he put it. Like every half hour, all day, every day. It has some kind of watchdog program that reboots it after a couple of minutes, but this is annoying to the customers, of which I am one, as they haven't a clue and my head is ready to pop off. I thought I would ask your people. I'm not part of the company, just a customer, but I'm the one in my small village that complains. So I know a bit about what is happening. The more they tell me, the less times I call. Anyway, if you have any clues, maybe I can get them to listen and solve this before the town drives them out and I end up with no cable internet to listen to you on. Okay, then he follows up with another email. Just thought I would add to what I wrote about the cable company modem. They say they are getting what sounds like a denial of service attack, a bunch of packets coming through all at once every half hour or so. They seem to think one of the customers has a virus that is doing this. Is this possible? Is there any way they can figure out who is sending? They really have no clue, and I don't want to end up with no internet. That would mean no podnets for me. Sob, sob. Thanks again, Valentine.
Yeah, a denial of service attacks usually wouldn't come from one computer. I mean, usually when you hear about those, it's a whole group of you know, cyber bullies, essentially, you know, writing little scripts. Maybe it could, you know, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not an expert, but that's whenever I hear that term, it's usually a large group of people.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say too.
But they should be able to track it. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they should be able to know where it's coming from if they
are
worth the salt at all, but maybe they're not.
Absolutely. Maybe give them a little more time and see if it corrects itself. If not, wow. I mean, I guess there's no other service providers in that area. So that's tough.
The beauty of it. Yeah. You got them.
Sometimes you're stuck with what you're stuck with, you know?
Yep.
But I guess, you know, denial of service attack wouldn't be out of the question.
No, they could definitely be getting attacked or it could be something similar. And like I said, it may be from one computer and I just, you know, it could be something similar to what I've read on in news and stuff like that. So I don't know. ISPs are just like cell phone companies. Nobody's any good. You know, I'm sick of having those arguments with, you know, we have Quest here, which is DSL, and Comcast, which is cable. you know, and those arguments are just as old as Verizon versus AT&T versus T-Mobile. Everybody sucks, basically. So,
yep.
Yeah, I think you nailed complaining. It. Yeah, you can switch and then you're just going to complain about them, the other person too. So
you have nailed that, dude. You're so right. Yeah. Okay. Here's another one from Ronald. Hi, Steve. I already have a good set of PC software tools, but I was wondering, is there a list that you know of common PC repair tools, i.e. auto runs, Process Explorer, Malwarebytes, etc. You know, like diagnostic tools, recovery tools, so on and so forth. And actually, Ronald, I have a great site for you to go on. If you go to datamike.net, if you go to his homepage, at the very top, there's a link that says Podnets Daily Common Links and Utilities. If you go there on Data Mike's great site, if you go there, you will find all of the utilities and tools that's ever been talked about on Podnets Daily. So I think that should pretty much point you in the right direction.
Yeah. There was one I was thinking about. I don't know if it's on Data Mike, but it's only if you are a TechNet subscriber, unless you want to pay for it. But it's called the, I don't see it here. Maybe it's spelled differently, but it's the Diagnostics and Recovery Toolset from Microsoft. It's part on tech. If you're a TechNet subscriber, you have to download this whole huge ISO called the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack for Software Assurance. And basically what DART is, that's the, you know, acronym for it. It's a bootable CD and, it's made by Microsoft, and it's weird because you have to make the CD on a computer. So, okay, if I'm going to repair an XP computer that's having problems, I have to make the DART CD from an XP machine. I have to download the special program to make the CD, and it has to be on an XP machine. So that's a little weird. But once you make one of them, then you're set, you know, so you can use that as many times as you want. But it has like a bug checker, a crash log analyzer kind of thing. A really great thing is it has a password reset built right in. So you pop it in, boot from the CD, and you can go ahead and change the password. I have to do that tonight for a guy whose kid set up a password and won't tell him the password for the computer. I don't know. That's a whole nother story. It's not my business, but I'll just go in and change the password to password or whatever. Wow. So it's something worth checking out. It's a huge download, and then you have to make, it's weird. Like if I made it on a Windows 7 machine, I'd have to make a disk to install it on an XP machine, and then on that XP machine, make the disk to use on XP computers. It sounds backwards. It is, because it is, but once you have all the disks, so XP Vista and 7, and it doesn't matter home or professional or anything like that, it's just the big, you know, the main versions, then you have, really? It, but it's come in handy a lot of times. Yeah, it's a pretty handy little tool.
Little added bonus to TechNet subscribers. I mean, does it have any like virus cleaning tools? Are these tools that that we know of that we use, or are they just proprietary to Microsoft?
It's all Microsoft stuff. It's not a whole lot of stuff. But it is kind of a mini operating system, so you can use it kind of as a, you know, like you would a Linux distro for copying stuff over to a hard drive. Mm-hmm. Or from a hard drive. I'm almost positive you can run, or no, what was it? There's one, I had to do it for something because I couldn't get, I forgot what it was. Oh, it was something, it was a computer that kept getting redirects, and I couldn't download the portable version of SuperNS spyware. I had lost it. It had gone off my drive. Or something like that. It was something like that where I had to go in there and actually add a file to their system. And you can do it that way too. I'm sure there's more things I haven't even looked at, but as far as password resets and crash analyzers go, that seems to be all, and it's for, you know, it's free if you're a TechNet. So
great tip. Great tip, man. Okay, one more thing here. This is a video, actually, of he says here, it says, I was browsing YouTube and came across this video on how to stop a hard drive from clicking. Yikes. So this is from Kins 1129.
I have an idea.
So basically, this guy puts a hard drive on his bench. He's plugging it up. It's a SATA hard drive. And let's see. He powers it up. Okay. Yep. And it's obviously clicking. You hear it clicking. Now he's taking a tool. He's going to open up the cover. Hard drive's still running. See the arm put back flaps. And now it's clicking. Wait. And he smashes it with a wrench.
I saw that coming. I figured.
Yeah, so I guess that would be one way to keep a hard drive from clicking. Great. Thanks, Ken.
That's funny. That's the only way I know. I thought after he kind of, when he took the top off, he had me first. I'm like, maybe this guy knows something super secret. I'm like, he's got extra large huevos if he's taking off a hard drive cover while the thing is running. But then he just smashed it.
I was like, well, I was thinking, you know, I thought when you disassemble those, it should be done in a clean room, but maybe this guy don't.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, Dustin's gonna get in there. I don't know what he's thinking, but he had the right idea. Just smash it.
I like how he used a wrench instead of a hammer.
Yeah, that was clever. Old crescent wrench.
Well, cool, man. I think that's all we have for this week. Let's see. Yeah, John, David, it was great having you on the show this week.
Yeah, good to be back. I always like talking this stuff. It keeps me from talking about it with my wife, who doesn't care to hear about it. So it's always a good thing.
Yeah, so you can find David at
TCPCServices.com. Yep.
Thank you. <He's> great. And Hey, everyone, if you want to sign up for a Podnuts Daily, you can go to podnuts.com/guests and sign up for a Podnuts Daily show. I would really appreciate it. We're keeping this thing rolling, and we'll have great guests like David. And David, I hope you come back again.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it. I hope to hope business picks up, so I'll have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about when I come back. So thanks for having me. It's always fun, and I'll keep listening for everybody else.
Absolutely. You can find me at timscomputerfix.com and at Twitter at timster_. So until next time, everybody, just keep fixing those computers.
Music for Podnuts Daily provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.